Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous. You want to go where? With what? Money you don't have? Remember, you're broke and worthless. Nobody loves you. This is the voice of the toxic ego, the voice that is holding you back from your divine life. Dr. Nydia is here to guide you in learning to let go of this voice. She is here to teach you inner work, a journey through the soul, to empower you in creating a passageway to spiritual development. Dr. Nydia received her PhD from Union Institute and University in Psychology with emphasis in addiction studies. She is a registered clinical social worker intern and received her master's degree from Barry University. She is a certified addiction professional for the state of Florida. She is also a Reiki master, healing touch practitioner, and a master hypnotherapist. For more information, visit her website at www.dranidia.com. Dr. Nydia. Now, please welcome your host of Inner Work, Dr. Nydia.
And good afternoon, this is Dr. Nydia.
And this is Alma. Good afternoon.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Wonderful. So, what's today's topic?
The toxic ego.
Continued.
Yes, from last week and from ever, because this is our main topic.
This is our main topic. Yes, it is. And so we've talked about the toxic ego as far as fear,
control,
manipulation, and judgment. How do we judge?
How we talk about everybody and we give our opinions and we ¿cómo se dice? Nos metemos
donde nadie nos preguntó. We do not mind our own business.
Exactly.
So when we're minding other people's business, we're not focusing on ourselves. We're not looking at what we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at what we're doing. I saw the toxic ego a little while ago. Didn't we see it?
Yes.
We saw it very, very, very clear. And what happens is that this person was so wrapped up in one little incident that it was impossible to even make her understand that she was focusing on something that's very self-destructive, right?
Yes.
And so she was pointing her finger at another person, saying it was the other person's fault about something. And so we're judging, this person was judging just one thing out of it. She was taking the big picture and turning it into one teeny weeny little dot. And that's what the toxic ego tends to do. They focus on just one thing. One little mistake that somebody makes, or one mistake that that person perceives that the other person makes.
I think here it's a big issue of perception.
Perception. But yes. It's also an issue of control.
Awesome.
Because this person wanted to control another person and couldn't do it. And so when that person couldn't do it, now it's all or nothing.
Yes.
and the person is still manipulating and trying to control, and now I'm not going to talk to you, and I'm never going to do this again, and I'm going to leave, and blah, 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 because what the toxic ego wants is for the other person to say, okay, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. Then you've been controlled.
Mm-hmm.
See, at that point now you're a prisoner of somebody else. And the other person could say, okay, I'm sorry, I promise I won't do it again, please forgive me, and not mean it, which is what usually happens.
Yes, and the reality is sometimes you say it and you don't mean it,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you can't.
You can't.
Because it's not in your...
Well, the thing is that it's not that you can't, even though it is, you can't... Look, what happens is that when somebody is manipulating you, you can't do everything that person expects you to do because it's impossible. See, when you're, the life is being choked out of you because they're so needy and they're so on top of you and they're so, they want and they want and they want, and everything has to be the way they want it to be, then there's no way you can please that person.
Mm-hmm.
See? So at some point you just say, you know what, the hell with it. I'll throw the chips where they may, and if this person goes, they go. If they stay, they stay. You know, but you know, who wants to live like that?
Yeah, no, no way.
And I was telling her, look at yourself. What are you doing? See, and no, she kept saying it was the other person's fault, and that's the toxic ego. But not even to be willing to say, well, you know. How much of this am I responsible for? Why is this other person ignoring me or my needs? You know, quote unquote.
Yes.
And that person doesn't realize that she's so needy that she's created a monster.
Mm-hmm.
See? So it is. It's very difficult to. So even when I said you're very controllable. I don't remember what I said. That I said I've seen you do it. Look at yourself. But what did you create? And she's focusing on just that one little incident. She's not seeing how her behavior has created whatever it is that's been created.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think everybody, you know, in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
both parts are
mm-hmm.
responsible for all what is happening in the relationship.
Everything, right.
So you have always to look at both parts. Your part and the other part.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's a big toxic ego.
Big, big toxic ego. To the point where the other person can't breathe. What do you think?
Yes.
You've seen the situation.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it gets very difficult when one person has, I mean, we all have a little bit of toxic ego. But when one toxic ego is so, so toxic that it lives, its very existence depends on the other person. And you can't do that. You know, your very existence can't depend on another person. You know, you have a relationship and you should be walking hand in hand together, not one dominating the other. And when you have that kind of domination, there's no, you know, there's really no, and this person has worked with me and knows about the toxic, and when I told her, that's your toxic ego, why did she claim, no, I know.
That was the toxic ego, speaking.
Yeah.
Screaming.
Yeah. No, it's not my toxic ego. Yes, your toxic ego. The thing is that if she doesn't want to see it, there's nothing you can do about it.
No.
Gotta let it go. So anyway, so this is what happens when we're living with our toxic ego. And when we go through the dark night of the soul, which is the next thing, once you've gone through, you know, all that controlling and all that, and you recognize that you there has to be a change. Then you go through the dark night of the soul. Now, here's the thing. when we're going through the dark night of the soul, when we're living in our toxic ego, we're sad, we're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is we've created that depression, like our friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's created her own depression, and she was crying, and she was, you know, angry, and she doesn't want to talk, and she's angry at one person, so she's not talking to anybody. You know? Did you notice?
Yes.
Nobody, okay, we're not talking to anybody.
I'm angry.
Yeah, I'm angry. And it's not fair to the other people that have nothing to do with what's going on. See? So, when we're depressed, what are the things that you say?
That poor me.
Poor me. I'm worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People in my life are rejecting me. Because this is what she was saying. It's the other person's fault. She rejected me. I was there and she ignored me. Okay? And so you create that feeling of worthlessness. But you create it. It's not really that you're worthless, but you're saying that you are and you're believing that you are. And when you believe something, it becomes very powerful. Then your whole life is dominated by it. See? And she's angry at me too because I didn't agree with her. She got trying to shut me up, you know what I'm saying? She started to yell at me and I had to, you know, kind of ask her, you know, She knows better.
Yeah.
She knows
because
better.
The thing is, she thinks you are taking sides.
Yes.
She cannot see.
Yeah.
Where the issue is.
No.
It's incredible because this person is working with you for years now.
For years.
She knows every word that you say. She knows.
Intellectually.
Yes.
But emotionally?
She can practice it.
Yep. And that's the whole thing. I've worked with people for years and years and years. And then they turn around and they start doing the things that they've always done. You know, when it really comes time to showing what you've learned, it's a matter of putting it into practice. And a lot of times it's very difficult to put it into practice. That's why I talk a lot about staying in the present. It's easier to put something into practice in the present and take responsibility. Because, okay, maybe the other person did do something. Because the story always comes from a little truth. We just blow everything out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're blowing everything out of proportion, then nothing is real.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can take something that really happened. I mean, yeah, maybe her that other person did ignore her for a minute or two. And we do. In a relationship, that's what you do. You walk into a place. When I was married, my husband and I would walk into a place and we all both go in our own directions. And he would sit somewhere and I would sit somewhere else. And if we were eating, you know, he would be with his friends. I would be with my friends. You know, it wasn't a matter of we came together, we left together. But once we were wherever we were doing our own thing. I wasn't up his butt and he wasn't up mine. See? Because that's the whole purpose of when you go socializing. You separate. You go with your people and I go with mine. And if you don't know anybody there, well, you make friends. See, that's the whole purpose. But you don't latch on to another person like a little baby boy. You know, you hold on to the mommy's leg or daddy's clothes or... You know,
yes.
And you have to pay attention to me, even though there are 50 people here
mm-hmm.
that you need to talk to. See, and so it's really very difficult to understand that to where you're secure enough with yourself that you can let the other person go, and know that that person may or may not come back, but you know it doesn't matter because you're secure enough in yourself where the relationship is fine, but it's not everything. See? So when we start getting depressed, when we go through the dark night of the soul, we really go through a very difficult time, because the dark night of the soul is the journey that an individual must experience with seeking higher consciousness. See, when you're looking for to go to the next level, you chances are you're going to go through the dark night of the soul. How difficult you make it for yourself is up to you.
The thing is, I think this is obligado, a step that you have to go through in order to get the light. You have to go down and be sincere with you. You know, no lies, no, you have to look at yourself as you are, as you really are.
As you really are.
We live our lives with plain of
lies.
Mm-hmm. We create this life, mm-hmm. and we believe we are beautiful, and we are that, and we are tall, and we are smart, and we are what we are.
Yes.
We have to live with that.
But we fool ourselves into thinking that we're better than we really are. We're human. We're just like everybody else. But yet we look down on other people. When we're judging them, we're looking down on them.
And the thing, we are not perfect. We can't.
Really?
Yeah.
We're not perfect?
Yeah, no, we are not perfect. And,
well, look, when you're born,
mm-hmm.
that's the very, very first experience that we go through, the birth experience. You know, we're comfortable in our own little womb and, you know, in that little place where we can suck our thumbs and we don't have to do anything. We poop and we cry and we move and we chuck our thumbs and then all of a sudden, boom, we're going through this horrible tunnel and we come out on the other side and we're screaming and we're cold and we're people are touching us and, you know, and that's the very first dark night of the soul. And then, you know, then you get cuddled and you're nice and warm and mommy loves you and all of that. And so, you know, you get comfortable there in that next level. See, when you're in your mother's womb, you're at one level. When you come out of that womb, that you have to go through the dark night of the soul. And who knows for the infant how long that takes in their experience. You know, for us, it could be a couple of hours or, you know, in reality of pain because even the mother has all that pain. Yeah. And for the child, it could be, in his mind, could be years. Because it's a long time for the baby, because he doesn't understand the time concept. So if he's in that space of all that pain and uncomfortableness, he may be thinking, "Oh my God, I'm going to be like this forever." and we tend to do that through our whole life. So then the baby is born, and now that it's been cleaned and cuddled and warmed up a little bit, and, you know, and so now it's fine again. See?
Hmm.
And we go through many experiences of the dark night of the soul because, excuse me, it's the growing process. So the journey is one of many phases we experience as we search for spiritual enlightenment, as our paradigm shifts and we transition from one false belief and ideas to a new, we experience disconnectedness and exile from the world around us. We are no longer where we were, but we're not yet where we're supposed to be once this transition is completed. The dark night of the soul is the agonizing and painful suffering an individual feels when his or her toxic ego resists the process of change. This suffering can manifest itself from resistance, loneliness, displacement, and helplessness. Resistance. What is that?
Yeah, we don't want to move. We tend to stay in the same place where we always are. We need to move. We need to change.
We need to change. And what happens is resistance to change is very common with the toxic ego because it relishes in reliving the past and sees change as painful. So when we're being born, literally coming from the womb, that's a change. And it's very painful. And the toxic ego ignores the changes occurring around it and focuses only on what it perceives others are doing to it, like your friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's other people that are doing this to her. She has nothing to do with it. And she said it. I have nothing to do with it. When I said to her, oh, so it's the other person's fault, she said, yes. Yeah, it's the other person's fault. No. Okay. So the toxic ego is often heard complaining. Why are they doing this to me? See? Our friend thinks that it's being done to her. She doesn't know that she doesn't realize that she's creating it. But the seed has already been planted. So let's see how much of the seed has already taken hold.
Mm-hmm.
We will see. So because the toxic ego lives in the past, it experiences a sense of loss over things the way things were and grieves for the good old days, seeing itself as a victim. The toxic ego becomes a whiner in the presence of change and demoralizes those around it with its negativity. You know what a whiner is, right?
What?
A whiner.
Person that is always complaining. And
a whiner, yeah, whine, whine. I always said that he wants to tease with that whine. Okay, so the toxic ego's focus is on itself and how the change will impact its life. We often experience unnecessary suffering because of our inability to let go of old ideas, attitudes, beliefs, which we no longer need. In the following thoughts. Here we go. The following is loneliness. When you're going through the dark night of soul, you're lonely.
Because and that is what is happening. She's not feeling that you are
supporting
her.
Yes.
And so because she cannot see. She cannot hear what are you saying, what you are saying.
No. And now because I'm her hero. So to speak, right?
Yes.
She looks up to me. But now she's mad at me because I'm not supporting her. After all she's done for me. It is not unusual to hear someone say, although they are surrounded by their friends or are in a crowd of people, they still feel miserably alone. Have you ever felt that? That you could be surrounded by a bunch of people and yet you feel like you're all alone.
Yes.
See?
Yes.
That's depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you begin to feel hopeless. Like nothing's going to change. When you were married,
mm-hmm.
that must have happened to you.
That's
a point.
A few times in my life.
Yeah.
I have this feeling.
That feeling. Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes, you know, at least one time in our life we go through that because we're going through the dark night of the soul. And it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It just is. You know, we don't belong. I've been through a big process in my life, big changes in my life. And when I'm going through the dark night of the soul, I remember when I stopped drinking and I started recovering. I felt like I was totally alone. The people that I knew, the people that I drank with, they weren't interested in me. I wasn't so much interested. It's not that I wasn't interested in them. I didn't drink. They drank. They didn't want to have anything to do with me because I don't drink anymore. And I'm sure I was getting very preachy. You know, how about let's go to AA or let's go to NA or let's go to 12-step program. And I was, you know, bombarding everybody with, I had learned something new.
Yes.
And so I wanted to help the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they shied away from me. Yeah. I'm busy tonight. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Yeah, that kind of thing. And the people that I was meeting, I didn't know them. They were strangers. They were wonderful strangers that were helping me do something I couldn't do for myself. But, you know, they weren't my friends yet.
Yes.
See? So, and I felt totally alone. I went to a convention where there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people there. And I felt totally alone.
Yes.
See? Because even the people that I went with, I was very, very new in the program. And the people that I went with, I didn't know them. You know, I knew them by their first name. And I had talked to them a few times, and, you know, in meetings and whatnot. But I wasn't friends with them. There was no click yet. See? And so I, for a long time, I felt like I was all by myself. So it's very important that when you feel that way, that you take the steps that you need to take to come out of that. But it was a process that I had to go through. So when we're lonely, we see how those around us appear comfortable, easily making friends, and easily surrounding themselves with others. And I truly remember that, where they would be talking and laughing and telling jokes and talking about things. And it was like I was the odd man out. I didn't understand. But I was physically and mentally, my brain was beginning to adjust to not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
My brain was beginning to recover. So naturally, I didn't fit anywhere.
Yeah.
There was no...
And, you know, there was time in my life, I'm a singer, so I work the night.
Mm-hmm.
And where I drank every night.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get drunk, but I drank every night. No, one whiskey, two beers, three beers, today more than yesterday, like that.
Right.
And I was not normal, happy, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And for any reason, I stopped to drink because I was taking antibiotics or something like that. And I went to a party. And it was so boring,
yeah,
because I couldn't drink, and
yeah,
it wasn't the same. You know, when people drink, they start to do.
Sure, you release your inhibitions, and you.
Yeah, and I felt like I felt like I was the
odd man out.
The judge.
Yeah, because the lonely person feels excluded, merely tolerated by others. The toxic ego experiences feelings of alienation or disconnectedness from others. You just don't feel like you belong there. See? The toxic ego feels unloved or unwanted, socially inadequate, shame-based, and flawed. We've talked about shame-based,
mm-hmm,
right? When you're living in shame, you feel that you are the flaw. You are the damage.
Yes.
See? You could be ashamed. Or embarrassed. Oh, I farted. Oops. You know, that's something I did.
Hmm.
But when you're shame-based, you are the fart.
Yeah.
See? You are the flaw.
Whatever you do, you are. You're where you are.
You are the and the damage. And so we have to learn that we're not damaged. We're perfect just the way we are. We're learning. And the more mistakes we make, the better it is. We get so embarrassed because we make a mistake. I celebrate. I make a mistake and people say, oh, yeah, you're wrong. Okay, so tell me how I can be right. Tell me what do I need to do to make it so that I can learn whatever it is that I need to learn from you. Explain it to me. And half the people that I say that to get mad at me. I said, great, so I made a mistake. Show me what I need to do not to make that same mistake again. Yeah, and people actually get upset with me because they think I'm being facetious when I'm really not. I want to know what did I do and what do I need to do to make it better next time so that I don't make these mistakes. But it's something that I do. It's not something that I am.
Cool.
Okay? So the feelings lead to low self-esteem and low self-worth. And remember, we create our low self-esteem and our self-worth. So the toxic ego is so busy focusing outwardly that it neglects its own basic needs. So my friend is going to shoot herself in the foot. And one characteristic of loneliness is that an individual can be in a room full of people yet feel utterly and painfully alone. This means that even though we are surrounded by others, the emptiness within is so profound that we cannot communicate with any other person than on a superficial level. You know, hey, how are you? A little smile here and there. But, you know, you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, displacement. Because the toxic ego lives in the past or in the future, it separates from true emotions and reports feelings of emptiness. That feeling of emptiness. Have you ever felt that feeling of emptiness?
Yes.
That's the worst thing.
You know, so sometimes I remember in bad times I had in my life, I was in spiritual pain, and I thought I was living in France, and I thought I would like to speak with someone. So I start to think each person I know to see which one I call and I couldn't call anybody because none of them will know or will understand me.
Right. Yeah. And you look through your telephone book and you go, you say, I'll call this one, and you can go through the whole list and know that none of these people are really going to hear you out. Because most of the time, when you talk to somebody, and it happens all the time, you say, I'm not feeling well. Well, did you try this? And, oh, maybe, and let's go to the movies. And they have all kinds of, they don't even let you, they don't listen. People do not listen. And that's all you need sometimes. It's just somebody to listen.
Mm-hmm.
See? And not say anything, just plain listen.
And that is the moment where, you know, which person listens to you. And
nobody does.
Nobody does.
No, and you know. And so that emptiness comes around and says, because you have to learn how to fill that emptiness yourself. Whatever you're feeling, you have to. Look, I saw a movie yesterday that was awesome. It's called The 7 Years in Tibet. And I thought it was like going to be, you know, some silly little, but I had nothing else to do. Nothing, and I wanted to, you know, veggie out. I just wanted my brain to go somewhere. And it was about this man, and it's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this man who wanted to climb Mount Everest, I think it was, in Tibet, in India.
Uh-huh.
And his wife was pregnant, and it started where she was pregnant, and he was saying, well, I'm going. And so, you know, the wife was very sad because she was pregnant. She was like 2-3 months away from giving birth. And the husband wanted to go and climb a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And so he left. And you saw her walking away crying. And his friend was consoling her.
Mm-hmm.
His friend. So he goes to Tibet. And to India, and something happened that he couldn't get up the mountain, so the whole team was coming down the mountain, and they got arrested because the war in Germany, Japan and Germany and all that, China and all that, the whole war broke out, and so they got arrested and became prisoners of the war,
mm-hmm.
And so. He eventually escaped from this prison camp, and him and another friend went to Tibet because India and Tibet right next to. So they figured if they escape from India, they can go into Tibet. But in those days, Tibet did not accept strangers unless they were specifically invited.
Okay.
So they had a hard time staying in Tibet. You know, the Tibetan people are not violent at all. They have no, you know, they bend over backwards for everybody. So they were told to, they had an escort to leave Tibet, But because the Tibetan people are so passive, they ran away, and the Tibetan chased them and all that. But once they caught them, they tried to get them to go, and they wouldn't go. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing is that now they're in a village, and they're told that they can't stay there because for whatever reason. But one of the family members, a man, came, he invited him to the house. And then he went to the elders to ask if those people could stay in his house, that he had invited them to stay. So anyway, long story short, they stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And where they stayed, there was a pond, a frozen pond. And so he was ice skating. And I'm skipping a lot. But he was ice skating, and there was a monk that was kind of wobbling all over the place, and he helped them and was teaching them how to ice skate.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Dalai Lama was looking through his telescope, but the Dalai Lama was a child. See, we're talking about 1940, and so when the Dalai Lama saw him, he saw his kindness. He's a white man with blonde hair and white skin. And he was being very nice to the monk. And so he asked to bring him the guy to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turns out that then he became the teacher. He became the Dalai Lama's teacher. The Dalai Lama must have been about 6 or 7 years old,
mm-hmm.
8 years old, something like that. And so the Dalai Lama had a lot of questions. And so they were talking and talking and talking, and the Dalai Lama would ask him a lot of questions, and he would give him the answers. He was a very well-educated man. And so through the years, suddenly the Dalai Lama had a dream, and he had a nightmare, see? And he had a vision, really is what it was, about when the Chinese invaded Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw it. And he woke up screaming, and so he sent for his friend. And so they were sitting there. You weren't allowed to touch the Dalai Lama. You weren't even supposed to sit next to him. You're supposed to sit below him. Wherever you are, if he's on a chair, you have to sit on the floor.
Okay?
See? And so one of the things that were truly, truly taboo was that you touched the Dalai Lama. But he's a child. And he started to cry and talked about how scared he was and that he saw that the Chinese were coming into this village where he was born.
Mm-hmm.
Not where he was now, but where he was born. And all of that was true. That was truly happening while he was having the dream. And so his friend put his arms around him. And, you know, it was like a child crying with an adult.
Mm-hmm.
See? Even though it was forbidden, he allowed it to happen. And they became really, really, really good friends, and still today they're very good friends. But they were talking about how to live without all the issues that we have. Just do what you have to do. Don't worry about what other people have to do. They have to, you know, account for themselves. And then at the end, eventually he had to leave. The Dalai Lama told him, you have to leave, it's time for you to leave. Because this guy had his son, the son was 7 years old now. And he had written him letters, and the son had kept writing him letters saying, don't write to me, you're not my father. You know, that kind of thing. And so the Dalai Lama said, you have to go back to your son. And so he did. And before he left, he gave him a box. When the Dalai Lama was 4 years old, somebody gave him a music box. Beautiful music, see? And so he gave him that box. And when he didn't open it, but when he got to his son's house, his ex-wife, he wanted to see his son, and his son didn't want to see him. And so he said, well, can I go into his room? And the kid was hiding in a closet somewhere, didn't want to come out. And so he opened the thing, took out the box, and turned it on and left. And then he watched him from the door, and the kid looked at him and started smiling. And then the next thing you saw was that him, the father, was teaching his son. In other words, that boss brought them together.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was teaching him now how to climb the mountain. They were up a hill somewhere, and he was teaching him how to climb. And when he got to the top, they hugged and all of that stuff. And so, and it ended there, where it pretty much ended there. But, you know, that's when the Dalai Lama around that time had to also leave Tibet, and now the Dalai Lama lives in India. But it's the whole idea of the peace that they live with. You know, the whole process. They have no ego. They have no toxic ego. Everything is the way it is. You stay in the present, and you can have live that peaceful life that you're really looking for. You say you want to be happy, then do things to be happy. But the toxic ego gets in the way. You don't see the problems. You don't see depression in Tibet. Even though they're under communist rule and all that, you don't see that. You don't see that sadness and the depression and anxiety and all that crap. And I've learned, if you read the Tao Te Ching,
mm-hmm.
it's a book, but it's every chapter is like one page. And it teaches you how to live in the present.
Yeah, but they are very rigid in their traditions.
Yeah.
They keep very well their peace together. You know, they don't let all the modern things to enter because this is part of our tensions and our stress. It's part of the technology, everything has to be fast, everything.
Right. They don't, but look at us.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world where we're so full of anxiety, and we're so full of anger, we're so full of, you know, rage and all that crap. Which way would you rather live? This way? Or, and let me tell you something. Just because they've chosen to live the way they live, where they live without all the technology, doesn't mean that you can't live like that in this world. You just have to get rid of your attachments. Your idea is that things have to be a certain way. You have to learn to say, I had a partner. And we were kind of getting together and doing stuff. And one day she called me up and she said, I don't want to do this anymore. And I said, okay. I had a lot invested in that relationship. But what was I going to do?
Okay.
Start arguing with her. You can't do that to me. I'm going to sue you. And that's where all the tensions come in. I said, okay.
Well, yeah.
That's the end of that. How much do I owe you? I'll buy you out. See?
Yeah.
And so I did. I was
very impressed. With your attitude.
Yeah? Do you remember that?
Yes. I was very, very impressed because when you start a business or a relationship with someone, you invest, you know,
mm-hmm.
money and time,
and energy.
If one of the partners decides to go out, he cannot exige. No, how do you say exige?
Demand
that they want their money back right away because
right.
you know you are going back you are leaving because you won.
Right.
So I was very impressed that you already I don't know how you did but you
boom boom boom
put all the money together and you give it to her and
she didn't expect that. She said, I thought you were gonna give it to me little by little. I said, no, I want it's over. You know, no sense standing on. If I can give it to you, I give it to you. How much you want? Right? And it was something that I didn't even think about. I just said, okay, it's over, it's over. What can I do? There's no sense, and this is why I live in peace, because I don't hang on to the idea that you did this to me or you did that to me. No, you did something to me that I didn't like. Okay, I got to move on. Like a friend. She kept going on and on and on. I said, listen, you already made your decision. Drop it. Yeah, but blah, and then on. I said, drop it.
Yeah.
Right?
Because she wants to convince herself first
mm-hmm.
and start a dispute.
A drama.
But yeah. No, a drama is already there.
Okay.
But she wants to confront and
fight. And it can be done.
To fight, you have to have two people.
Yes, that's right. She can fight with herself all she wants. But the whole point is that if you want to live in peace, you can have attachments. You can hang on to things that are not going to work. When my friend, I even lost the friendship. I don't know why I lost the friendship. I didn't do anything to her. But she got, if she's this type of person that if it's over, it's over in anger rather than in peace.
Yeah.
See? And I talk to her like when I do see her or when I have to talk to her, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I'm not mad at her. Right? But for some reason, she thinks that she has to be angry.
Yeah, and she's angry with me. With your friends also.
She's angry with all of my friends. She had a partner, and her partner left her and went to live with somebody else. And so the other person is my friend also. So I talked to her, and I talked to her partner. So now this one doesn't talk to me because I talked to her friend. Her ex-partner. Yeah. It's like, hello. But see, the whole thing is that it's okay. She can be angry at me. She has the right to do anything she wants. See? And so if she doesn't talk to me, well, that's fine. I don't lose anything because I don't have any expectations of a relationship. If she's my friend, she's my friend. If she's not, she's not. I don't stop caring about her and loving her as a friend just because she's mad at me. See what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I have complete peace in my life because, making little discoveries for me are so exciting. I discovered that if I buy Pampers, but disposable diapers, and put them on my doggy, he will pee all over my house. That is just so exciting to me. Yay! Why didn't I think of this sooner? But the thing is that things like that are so really insignificant, if you really look at it, all I have to do is train my dog or mop after him all the time. But that's the whole thing, that I can get excited about little things and not have to concern myself with big things. Big things take care of themselves. See? And when you have complications in your life, there are a lot of parts to those complications. And when one of those parts falls apart, see, then you have chaos. Then you truly have chaos. So when this girl decided that she didn't want to be my partner anymore, and I know she decided it because I put my foot down. She used to run the meetings, the business meetings that we had. And she was all over the place with them. And one day I said to her, listen, you have to have an agenda and you have to go by that agenda. You have to stick with the agenda. Well, she got mad at me because I told her she needed an agenda. Yeah, and a few weeks later after that, and there were other little things that were happening. But that, I think that was the main thing, that even when we were in the business meeting and she changed the order of the agenda.
And the thing is, she was playing boss. She was playing boss.
Yeah, and which is fine, but you have to set limits. You can't just allow a 2-year-old to run the household. It doesn't work that way. So when I started to set limits with her, then she didn't like it. And it's like a friend, she had her temper tantrums, her emotional temper tantrums, and she just said, "That's it, I'm done." And I said, "Okay, what's the problem?" I didn't have a problem, and so she was shocked. I think she expected me to ask her and beg her, and it doesn't work that way. I don't beg, okay? So we become displaced. It's not uncommon to hear the toxic ego say, nobody understands me, and I feel that I do not belong on this planet. I used to feel that way. So we have to understand that when we're going through the dark night of the soul, we go through hopelessness, okay? Yes. And so the ego embraces the illusion of the past and believes that it can escape self-responsibility. And this is what's happening with our friend. She doesn't want to be responsible. So she's using somebody else to do what she probably wanted to do a long time ago. So we realize that when we sacrifice the fantasy that someone else is going to do something for us, which we are capable of doing for ourselves, our feelings of hopelessness disappear. You want hopelessness to disappear? Start taking responsibility and start doing for yourself. So we realize that our feelings of hopelessness comes from the inability to take responsibility for our own lives. Is that interesting or what? And there's always hope. When the toxic ego is threatened, the individual experiences the journey through the dark night of the soul. This journey is often necessary in order to achieve a higher level of consciousness. The quest is akin to the rebirthing experience. Without such an experience, the individual would not achieve the transformation necessary to encounter the true benefit of a spiritual awakening. And next week, we're going to talk about the spiritual awakening, our inner essence. Now we're going to talk next week about our inner essence because we're now running out of time.
I want to remind you that the new book, Dr. Media's new book, is in Amazon, in all the online stores, Barnes & Noble, and everywhere. Letting Go of Resistance, the Inner Work Journey. For those that are professionals, in the beginning of next year, January, we are opening.
We're opening an addiction institute for anyone who wants to take courses on addiction. Our first class is going to begin in January 18th. Our website will be up soon, and as a matter of fact, we're working on all of that. Mm-hmm. If you want any more information, what's my number? Call me at
786-477-8534.
And we'll see you soon.
We'll see you next week. Next week, we have a 7 minutes, 32 seconds. And
my website is
DrNidia.com, DrNidia.com. And in Amazon, if you look for Dr. Nidia, you'll find also some recordings for meditations and good stuff. And we are preparing other things. If you have friends, Spanish speaking, we also have in Amazon the new Spanish book from Dr. Nidia, El Poder de Tu Esencia, Conociendo Tu Yo Interno.
And our Spanish program on Blog Talk Radio is on Friday to 2:30. From 2:30 to 3:30.
Exactly. So,
in Spanish.
Yes. We'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to Dr. Nidia Show. Bye.
See you next week.
Anything. Thank you for listening to Inner Work with your host, Dr. Nydia. For more information on Dr. Nydia, please visit her website at www.dranidia.com, Dr. Nydia. And for radio show information, visit www.earthangelsradio.com. That's EARTHANGELSRADIO.com. Dr. Nydia will help you to face your inner self.